will enable the March 22, 2013 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the part of the Midwest where spring has yet to arrive, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. With the arrival of spring, on the calendar at least, it's time to review just how prepared you are for Mother Nature's surprises, especially if you're disabled. Greg Rosenberg, AB9MZ, is.
Most of my life I've had a fascination with emergency preparedness. I got involved with civil defense as a child. My scoutmaster was really big on it, so they used to do a lot of mobilization drills and search and rescue things, and it was all simple things at the kid level. And then from there I got involved in the Bridgeview Civil Defense Organization as a teenager and just continued on as emergency services disaster agencies formed in the communities I moved to, and today I'm with Tinley Park Emergency Management Agency. I also run the Skywarn operations for northeastern Illinois and northwestern Indiana and work directly with the National Weather Service. I'm a founding member of the Department of Homeland Security. I've been with the FBI InfraGuard program doing national infrastructure protection for about 25 years now, and that's just what I do for fun. I've spent most of the last couple decades teaching emergency preparedness to the public in different groups. I was actually a Red Cross first aid instructor for about 16 years, so it's just been kind of part of my life. What are individuals with special needs? You know, obviously those of us that are visually impaired, people that have auditory impairments, physical or cognitive challenges, babies, elderly, those with special medical needs, and those on life support. And I'm going to speak not only to the blind and visually impaired, but to disabilities in general, since some of us have more than one disability. So here's a scenario for you. I met a young lady yesterday. Her name is Anne, and she kind of caused me to think of this scenario. She's blind and deaf. And so here's the scenario. You're blind and deaf. Your silent call starts to vibrate. When you answer it, a family member tells you that there's a multi-state supercell produces spawning tornadoes, and you have 20 minutes to leave where you're at and go to shelter. So the question I have for everybody here is, do you know where you're going to go, and do you know how you're going to get there? So those are a couple of the challenging scenarios that we can face. So what are our objectives today? We're going to learn about the benefits of being prepared. We're going to identify the hazards that you might face in your home, your work, school, or your vacation, or anywhere else you might be. We're going to identify what the greatest challenges are for people with visual disabilities. We're going to recognize the importance of making a disaster plan for our families, develop a family disaster plan, and modify your plan to accommodate those with special needs. We'll create a communications plan, which is really important, and we'll talk about that in a lot of depth, because that's one of the more important elements here. It's planning our escape routes. How are you going to get out of the building you're in, and how are you going to get out of the community you're in if you have to go somewhere farther away? Making an emergency kit for home, for school, for work, for vacation, wherever you might be. Identify the steps to take after a disaster. So those are the things we're going to talk about. What are the benefits of being prepared? Why do you care? A lot of people just stick their head in the sand, like my 24-year-old son. He doesn't want to know anything about this stuff. He just figures, well, whatever happens, happens. The Generation X and Generation Y, he's part of Generation Y. Why should I do that? Why does that matter? It makes you a survivor, not a victim. We all want to be a survivor. None of us want to be a victim. So it reduces fear and anxiety if you're prepared and understand the disasters. And that's really important, because if we can't see the situation we're in, it does dramatically raise our anxiety and our fear. There's a great book I started reading last night called The Science of Fear by Bob Gardner. I'd highly recommend you pick it up and read it. It's a really neat book. Certainly we reduce the impact of disasters that they have on us and our families. If we're prepared and understand the scenarios when they do occur, we'll be mentally ready to challenge them head on. Communities, families, and individuals will actually know what to do when a disaster occurs if you're prepared for a disaster. So what hazards might you face? Most of these are common. Most of these, you know, I'm going to read them really fast. Thunderstorms, lightning, tornado, winds, floods, fires and wildfires, heat waves, droughts, extreme cold, winter storms, ice storms, blizzards, earthquakes. I'm going to pause at earthquakes a second. We all know about the Madrid Fault. Well, the Madrid Fault has been much more active lately, and there's been quite a few tremors on it, and it's expected that sometime in the next few years it may produce an 8 or a 9. And if that does occur, not only will we feel it here, but we could even have some minor damage to buildings. Chemical spills or gases that are leaked in the air, explosions, blackouts, solar storms. Everybody may not know we're in solar cycle 24 now, but solar cycle 24 has produced a lot of CMEs, or coronal mass ejections from the sun, and this produces a lot of gamma and X-ray radiation. The first round of gamma radiation hits the Earth in about 8 minutes, and the X-ray radiation may take up to 72 or 96 hours, but it will disrupt communication satellites, navigation systems, GPS. If it's something like an X-30, it could shut down our power grid and actually destroy transformers. There's 42 transformers in the Midwest power grid. There's 6 spares in the entire country. Need I say more? You know, terrorism's all about instilling fear in people, and making it so you're uncomfortable with your day-to-day life. So we need to just be aware of the fact that although terrorism's there, it's really not going to likely cross most of our paths. War, biological hazards, nuclear hazards, radiological, civil emergencies, transportation accidents, other types of accidents, mudslides, which I personally experienced with a friend of mine in Mexico, which was pretty scary, hurricanes, tsunamis, and last but not least, volcanoes. Here's a simple model to think about. The first aspect is you as an individual. What capabilities do you have? What limitations do you have? What do you need to be prepared to survive an event? The next aspect is you and your environment. You know, do you understand your environment so that you can safely leave it should the building become damaged, or should you be trapped? Do you have enough to survive in place? Do you know how to walk the streets or find transportation around the area where you happen to be at? And the last element is you and your community. It's going to be vital for us to reach out to all the various organizations and try to make disaster planning resources available in alternative mediums. I talked to my FEMA counterpart in the warehouse that distributes all the materials, and Don told me that they have nothing in Braille, nothing in audio, and nothing in large print.
You're listening to a presentation that was made by emergency preparedness advocate Greg Rosenberg, AB9MZ, who happens to be visually impaired himself. We'll resume Greg's Chicago presentation in a moment. This is the Radio Amateur Information Network, itching to take its spring pilgrimage to Dayton in May.
What are the greatest challenges that blind people face during an emergency? Well, awareness is probably the first and biggest one, because you might not even know an emergency or disaster or some event is happening around you. You need to figure out how you're going to successfully become aware of emergencies. And I'll talk about these things in more detail. I'm going to casually mention them first. Transportation is a big one. None of us can load our trunk up with goods and jump in the car and drive to another city in order to avoid some event that might threaten our path, or in order to go somewhere safe when we're told ahead of time. Communications is a big one. We don't have the ability to necessarily read print or reach out on a variety of different communications mediums, so it's important to come up with some strategies there. Support is critical. You know, establishing a buddy system, becoming friends with your neighbors, having people you can talk to when a situation arises is very critical. So you can check on them and they can check on you, and you can make sure everybody's safe. Your path may be blocked. Sidewalks could be uplifted in an earthquake, and you might not be able to walk on a street or a sidewalk. So how are you going to get past those particular scenarios? Your home might become damaged and you might have to leave your home. Your usual way of getting food may be disturbed, and you might have to figure out how you're going to get food or medicine or any number of other things. You may not be able to carry out all the things you need. You may be stuck with a cart you can pull or a backpack you can wear with whatever you can bring with you. And your daily living activities could very well be disrupted as well. Utilities will likely be disrupted in many scenarios, gas, electric, water. You should learn how to turn those services off. And with one caveat, if you turn gas off, it has to be turned back on by a professional because you risk damaging your household appliances or causing an explosion or a fire. With respect to water, if there's water contamination and you can shut your water off in time, you might be able to use the water in, say, a bathtub you fill up or a hot water heater or the water that's in your pipes if you don't have any other source of water. We'll talk about some sources of water in a little bit as well. Familiar landmarks may be gone. If there was a building that maybe played music out their speakers, a restaurant or something, that was a good landmark for you. There may have been a pillar you know is there or some other type of markings on the street. If those things are gone, you may not be able to use those as navigational tools. Limitations on what you can bring with you is a big factor. I mentioned that a second time because it's quite important. You need to be able to care for yourself and care for your family members, and it may be more challenging if you're not in a place you're familiar with. If you have children, you could even get separated. And if you get separated, that can be scary. If you're at home or work and your children are at school and a disaster happens, and let's say that we did an earthquake drill and the simulation was that 26 bridges collapsed in the Illinois, and it made a lot of people trapped in certain sections of the state, and it made it difficult for commerce and transportation, so people couldn't get food supplies and medicine to hospitals. Having sufficient financial resources to afford what you might want to have for your emergency kit can be a challenge for many of us because many might not have very high incomes or extra money. What should a family disaster plan consist of? Knowing the protective measures for specific hazards is important, and we're not going to go into that today because it's about an 8-hour course if you want the whole thing. Assessing your needs, find out what you personally need or your family members need. Recognizing warning systems and signals. This is going back to the awareness topic. You need to be able to become aware of incidents that are occurring. You can get a weather radio that's a full alert radio that will actually tell you all the different emergencies that are going on. I have not found one that's accessible yet, so the best you can probably hope for is when an event is read over the air, you can just push the button on the radio and listen to what it is, or it'll turn on automatically. There's sirens in all of our communities. Those are intended for outside people, not inside your home. So the sirens aren't necessarily loud enough for everybody to hear in the house, but they're to warn people that are on the outside to seek shelter. There's the EAS, Emergency Activation System, which is on all televisions and radios. If you are deaf, most of them are captioned as well, so that can be beneficial. Evacuation from the disaster area versus sheltering in place. Now, there may be many emergencies where you want to just shelter in place because you don't have to leave the area where you're at. So if it's a tornado, for example, you might shelter in place in a basement or on an inside room, like a bathroom oftentimes will be in the center of in the house to protect you. It's no longer really a good practice to open your windows. It doesn't really solve any problems. In fact, it could cause your house to explode even more than if the windows were closed. So it's actually better to leave them closed.
This has been the first of two excerpts from a talk on emergency preparedness for the disabled by visually impaired Chicago Ham, Greg Rosenberg, AB9MZ. Greg will conclude his presentation next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2013 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder-producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding all of you very 73 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com